Hello, and welcome to Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Keshet Star, and today we're going to be learning Tehillim Perek Samech Chet, Psalms chapter 68. In this perek, we will continue exploring the theme of justice and discuss how Hashem ensures ultimate justice in the world. Pasuk Bet, verse 2, reads, Yakum Elokim, may God rise, Yafutsu Oyvenu, Vianusu Misanecha Mipanav. His enemies scatter, and those who hate him flee before him. Rashi asks the question here, what enemies are we talking about? Who is this? And Rashi answers the question by saying that the enemies here refer to Amalek and their like. And I will say, because Pesach is coming up, in my favorite Pesach Haggadah, which has beautiful images, you're never too old for a good illustrated Haggadah, there's a page that shows images of essentially all of the major enemies of the Jewish people over time, all the way from Amalek in the desert, to Haman in the Purim story, to the Crusaders, the Cossacks, the Nazis, etc. And there's always something year after year about seeing all of these enemies together on one page that gives me the chills. And in this pasuk, David reminds us that despite the injustice that we see in the world around us every day, God will ensure ultimate justice eventually. And we will one day see our enemies dispersed and destroyed. The next pasuk continues this theme, noting that Hashem will disperse your enemies like smoke, which is also a compelling image that enemies that are so powerful and really plague us today will disappear tomorrow as insubstantial as a whiff of smoke. In Pasuk Daled, verse 4, we switch from focusing on our enemies to focusing on the righteous. V'tzadikim yismichu yaltzu lifnei Elokim v'yasisu b'simcha. And the righteous will rejoice, they will exult before Hashem and delight with joy. Rabbi Zelig Pliskin asks an interesting question here, which is what David is referring to when describing joy in this context. After all, doesn't everyone want to feel joy? We all want to feel good, to experience pleasure, to have good days and not bad days. That's pretty much a given. And in fact, if you think about it, even evildoers want to experience joy. Presumably, that's why they engage in that evil in the first place. The person embezzling money from a company is doing so because they want to use that cash to buy a nice house or to enjoy living on a lake with a nice boat in the backyard or to go to, you know, a fancy all-inclusive resort and have a wonderful time. And so joy is a powerful motivator. But if both do-gooders and evildoers both want to pursue joy, then how do we understand what joy actually is? As Rabbi Pliskin points out, there is a fundamental difference between superficial pleasure-seeking and deep joy, even though in our language we often conflate the concepts. For a pleasure seeker, joy is temporary. You're super excited to eat that delicious meal, but once you finish the food, before you've even paid the check, it's over. The joy has dissipated. But when someone lives their life with a higher purpose and with a focus on serving God, that joy is lasting. It doesn't just go away when the action at hand is concluded. And one thing I'll note here, as someone who loves a delicious meal at a restaurant myself, the point here is not to forego finding pleasure in the food that we eat and the iced coffees that we drink and in the world around us, but rather the question is, what is the goal? Is food and physical items a means to an end or the end itself? Are we eating food because that is the highest we can aspire to? Or are we eating because it gives us the fuel to serve God and it gives us an opportunity to connect with God, to make brachot, to make blessings on our food, and to really appreciate what God is providing us? When the pasuk tells us that the tzaddikim are going to rejoice, that the righteous will experience this extraordinary joy, it will be because their lives are focused on the long-lasting and meaningful joy that comes from serving God, as opposed to temporary and more ephemeral joys. As the parak continues, we discuss God from a slightly different perspective. In Pasuk Vav, David calls Hashem Avi Yitomim V'Dayan Almanot, the father of orphans and the judge of widows. Rashi understands this verse allegorically to say that the orphans are not just any orphan, but that actually represents the Jewish people, because the Jewish people are called orphans without a father in Megillat Eicha, or the Book of Lamentations, which we read on Tisha B'Av and really detailing the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Similarly, Rashi argues that the widow here refers to Jerusalem, who is described as a widow, again in Megillas Eicha. The Ibn Ezra interprets this verse differently, going with more of a plain meaning, that essentially the reference to orphans and widows is about actual orphans and widows. And in fact, the idea of protecting orphans and widows and the centrality of that message is present throughout Tanakh. For example, in Shemos or in Exodus chapter 22, verse 1, the Torah tells us, "You shall not oppress the widow or orphan, and that if you do mistreat them, I will heed their cry as they call out to me." Later in the book of Isaiah, chapter 1, verse 17, we are admonished, uphold the rights of the orphan, defend the cause of the widow. But let's think for a second, why the emphasis here on orphans and widows? In the times of the Torah, women were financially dependent on men and really needed the men in their lives to survive in many respects. Therefore, the widow and the orphan are the ultimate symbol of vulnerability. This is a family that's lost its protector, its financial provider, its champion. And the emphasis on protecting those who are vulnerable in our societies is a cornerstone of the Torah. And in this pasuk of Tehillim, we're really ascribing that quality to God himself, that he is not just the God that looks out for the wealthy and powerful and who really guards the rights of nations, but that this same God is concerned with the most vulnerable people around us, and interestingly, with the people that are the easiest for us to ignore. Rabbeinu Bachya echoes this point, commenting that although God is the Most High, he looks after the very lowest in our societies and concerns himself with their fate and security. As we, as human beings, are tasked with trying to emulate God in the world, this description of God as a defender of the defenseless is really a reminder for us to pay attention to those that need our help and to remember again that the most important people on our list or that we might think of in our communities aren't necessarily the people whose position matters the most to God. In Pasuk Zion, we continue this discussion of God as a champion for the defenseless and the outcasts. Elokim Moshiv Yechidim Baita, we read, God puts the solitary people in houses, and Motzia Sirim Bakosharot, he redeems prisoners at the opportune time, but Afso Ririm Shachnu Tzechicha, but the rebellious will dwell in an arid land. So there's a lot to understand in this Pasuk. First, let's start with the idea of Hashem putting the solitary people in houses. Here again, we have this idea of Hashem coming in and saving those who are overlooked and placing them in homes and communities. Rashi understands this allegorically again, noting that who is this solitary person? That's the Jewish people who are wandering. And what's going to happen eventually? God will settle us in our land in a home that is eternal. Next, the pasuk discusses how Hashem will redeem the prisoners at the opportune time. So what does that mean? Rashi says that this refers to when Bnei Israel, when the Jewish people left Egypt, that Hashem took the Jews out of Egypt at the perfect time for travel, when it was neither too hot or too cold. And I will say as a side note, as someone who would like the world to stay at 72.2 degrees at all times, I can really relate to this. And finally, when the pasuk refers to the rebellious people who have to dwell in an arid land, that, according to Rashi, is the Egyptians who were punished for their actions. Now, one thing that is very, very interesting about this pasuk is that it really contains within itself a tension between justice and mercy. We have God, this sort of loving figure that looks out for the lonely and solitary, that not only redeems prisoners, but redeems them right at the exact perfect moment. And then we also have God who's punishing the rebellious with this unpleasant sounding punishment. The Or HaChaim discusses this tension and focuses in on a particular word in the pasuk, which is bakosharot. In the context of this pasuk, this generally means at the right time or the opportune time. But when you kind of dissect the word, we can flesh out its deeper meaning. The Or HaChaim argues that Bakosha Rotz is a hybrid word. It consists of the word bechi, or weeping, as well as the word shir, or song. And these words are, of course, opposites, right? Weeping represents despair, and singing is what we do when we're so unadulteratedly happy that we can't contain it. So how do we have weeping and singing, together in the same exact word? The Or HaChaim offers a beautiful answer to this question, saying that the combination of bechi and shir, of weeping and singing, highlights the duality of God's commitment to both justice and mercy. In the moment of the splitting of the sea, the Or HaChaim says, God was both rejoicing at the survival and the success of the Jewish people, and he was mourning the loss of the Egyptians. That even when God metes out justice, in the moment of justice, there's still an element of mercy and empathy. And so this blend, this sort of juxtaposition of mercy and justice in the pasuk itself, highlights the larger juxtaposition of both mercy and justice in how Hashem runs the world. As the parak continues, we talk more about this idea of justice and mercy. Pasuk Chet discusses how Hashem went out before his people when we walk through the wilderness, and that he will do so forever. Rashi says this term Selah, which is understood as forever here, means that Hashem showed us in the wilderness that this is his way for all time, that for every distress, there will be a redemption. Here again, we see both justice and mercy. We struggle in the moment, but the redemption will come eventually. The next pasukim expand on this idea, with pasuk yud saying, Geshem nidavot tanif Elokim, you pour down generous rain, and that Hashem, you established your heritage, which was weary. The idea is that when we're parched, when we're tired, when we're at the end of our rope, then Hashem gives to us generously. Towards the end of the parak, David says, Baruch Hashem yom yom yamas lanu hakel yeshuatenu selah. Blessed Hashem, every day he lavishes upon us salvation forever. Rashi notes here that the salvation Hashem will bring us is greater than our burdens, which is always an important reminder when we are dealing with times of difficulty and stress. Rabbi Pliskin shares another beautiful concept here, which is that we should thank and bless Hashem for the salvations that he offers us every single day. Very often, we might feel secure that, okay, I have what I need to get through today, but when it comes to tomorrow, that makes us nervous. Will I have what I need then? By internalizing that idea that Hashem's salvation is not sort of a one-time gift, but it's the gift that keeps giving, and it's something that's renewed every day, it can allow us to approach the uncertainties of the future with a sense of serenity and peace. As always, we have to do our hishtadlus. We have to put our effort into ensuring a strong and prosperous and safe and healthy tomorrow, but that we also need to trust God that even with all the uncertainties in the world around us, that God will be with us and protect us and renew that protection each and every day. Thank you so much for learning with us. Le'iloi Nishmas, Malka Esther, Bas Tzvi Yosef.